Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. What makes someone a significant other? And does it have to be a romantic other? Lawrence Forbes explores the gray areas in his essay, A Brother as Significant as Any Other. It's read by Jeffrey Boyer Chapman, who stars in the Lifetime show Unreal and hosts the podcast Conversations with Others.
I was flying high when my younger brother was hired to sling baggage for a major airline, only to be grounded when I learned that siblings didn't qualify for flight benefits. But I was thankful when Jeff found a loophole. Family benefits were not just for spouses, but also for significant others. Knowing I would never be the former, he listed me as the latter. After a stream of gay-themed jokes about how our union would save my brother from military service, my maiden name dilemma, should I use Forbes or Forbes? And a sitcom idea for Black Entertainment Television featuring my straight sibling and me, his homosexual brother. I wrote down his employee number. I waited for the paperwork to go through before using his name. And when it came time to book my first trip, I called the reservation line and announced, I'm the significant other of an employee. When the agent asked for the employee's name and mine, I told him the truth. Jeff Forbes and Lawrence Forbes. I don't know what the agent thought of our shared surname. Maybe he assumed that when you're gay and can't marry, you sometimes take your lover's last name anyway. Whatever the case, there was always a clear shift in tone when agents thought that they had grasped the nature of our significant otherness. But it was a shift towards the positive. In fact, they seemed to go out of their way to treat me with sympathy, perhaps to offset the Defense of Marriage Act. It was, in short, a fraud of the highest order. Or was it? Of all the men I have loved or tried to love in my life, my brother is easily the most significant. In many ways, my ideal mate would be a lot like him. 6'5" tall, 2 inches taller than I, and a fellow artist, culture lover, and travel fiend. His musical tastes range from Louis Armstrong to Frank Zappa. He calms me down during freakouts, favors my dry and shamelessly un-PC humor, and also hates the term African-American. We do not consider ourselves African, but simply American. Our mother hailing from Alabama, and our father from the island of St. Vincent in the West Indies. Where other men have made me feel smothered or shut out, Jeff cleared space for me just last year by giving up his room in our parents' house when a car accident forced me to move back home to recuperate. I have also yearned for his presence in my life. An only child for my first 11 years, I had seriously campaigned for a sibling. I even employed the lowest blow argument I could imagine against my parents. If you both die, I'll be all alone. At least I said if instead of when. So when my parents shared the news of my mother's pregnancy, I was ecstatic. The day Jeffrey was born, I celebrated by handing out blue lollipops to my classmates. Although the brown and purple ball of flesh I visited at Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn was not exactly what I had pictured, I looked forward to being his protective older brother until he was old enough to become my best friend. As my father and uncles smoked cigars in our house the night before my mother and Jeff came home, I huffily sprayed Lysol. Over the following years, I fed, changed, burped, babysat for, and photographed Jeffrey, and eventually picked him up from school. I helped him sound out the letters of the alphabet. Later, when I was a college student at St. John's, I took him along to fraternity basketball games. The guys hated having to curb their foul language in his presence, but they loved having a cute 8-year-old around, mostly because he was such a girl magnet. When I was 19, my family moved from the apartment in Brooklyn where I had grown up to a house in Valley Stream on Long Island. I had known for years that I was gay, but hadn't come out to my family. It took another 2 years before I felt ready to tell my parents, who struggled with the news but tried to be supportive, saying that as a family, we have to be there for one another. It proved to be an awkward time, a year at least, before this truth settled in and my parents adjusted to it, which they've done admirably. I never worried that they would reject me or anything as dramatic as that. We're too close. More worrisome to me was my relationship with Jeffrey, who was just 9, too young to tell. But as the years passed and he raced towards puberty, I knew I needed to do it soon. If I waited much longer, he might adopt the homophobia of his peers and it would be too late. So, 2 months before his 12th birthday, when I was coming home from California for a friend's wedding, I decided the time was now, and my parents agreed. But the prospect weighed on me. All I could think about was what my revelation might do to my relationship with my little brother. Not long after I arrived, I told Jeffrey I needed to talk to him about something important. And he and I went out to our backyard gazebo and sat down. After some awkward small talk, I just said it. I'm gay. I'm a guy that likes other guys. I kept rambling, and he took it all in without comment. I asked him if he had any questions, and he asked if I had one particular boyfriend. I told him I didn't. It was a lot for him to process, and I couldn't figure out how he felt. Back in San Francisco, I waited to hear from him. Usually, we spoke every week on the phone, yet after my visit, weeks passed with no call. I wanted to give him space, so I didn't call him. But inside, I was dying. I wanted to hop onto the next plane to New York and talk him out of hating me, but I couldn't afford the fare. Then, after 3 weeks, he finally called, and our conversation was just as always, with one exception. Jeffrey told me that at school, a friend of his had mocked a fellow classmate for being a homo, and that he had responded by saying, "What's wrong with that? My brother is gay. By the time we hung up, we had made plans to get together during my next visit to New York. It was a turning point. Rather than drive us apart, my admission had bound us closer together, which maybe has proved to be a little too close because neither of us has found much success over the years with relationships beyond our own. Mostly, I have had brief affairs with men of various nationalities, earning me the nickname the UN, and Jeff has fared no better at finding someone. Our parents recently celebrated their 39th anniversary. Their union has always been one of affectionate gestures and caretaking. You'd think growing up with such stellar role models would help us find healthy, long-term relationships. Yet, neither of us has had a partner for longer than a season. Sometimes I wonder if we had come from the dysfunctional homes many of our friends had, or the terminally damaged ones my father visited during his time at Child Protective Services, might we have been better prepared for reality? Exasperated, Jeff retreats into his music the same way I withdraw into my writing. We stay up late watching Billy Blank's action movies or mocking singles chatline infomercials while he claims he's too busy for a lover. I've often wondered if our tight twosome has kept other partners away. Sometimes I miss the open-hearted boy who used to call me at 3 a.m. San Francisco time because he wanted to talk or simply because he knew I would be up. I wish I could take back the 9 stressful months after graduate school when I treated him like an unruly child instead of my best ally. But I can't. So I make do with the man who shares my interests and understands me better than any domestic partner ever has. For 25 years, we've stuck by each other through threats and changes, small and large. For now, we even live together. I have no one more important in my life, and neither does he. My point, I guess, is that there is no fraud in claiming airline benefits. There's hardly even a loophole. I'm grateful for all those free flights, most of which Jeff and I used to visit each other anyway. But I don't feel the least bit guilty. I believe that we, significant brothers, deserved them every bit as much as any official significant others do. Alas, Jeffrey lost his baggage handling job last year, along with our flight benefits. But our status with each other hasn't changed. And although I'm all for gay marriage, its spreading legality worries me a little. After all, if gay couples nationwide can marry, then what will happen to the rights and benefits of significant brothers like us? Mr. and Mr. Jeffrey and Lawrence Forbes Forbes.
That's Jeffrey Boyer Chapman reading Lawrence Forbes' essay, A Brother as Significant as Any Other. We catch up with Lawrence and his brother Jeff after the break.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. to understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Lawrence, is that you?
Yes.
Hey.
Jeffrey. Yeah, haven't spoken to you in a while. How are you doing?
Not bad. Not bad. Not since 2 days ago.
Yeah, no, awesome. It was a long time. Long time.
Lawrence is 47 now, and Jeff is 35. They live on opposite coasts, so when we talked to them, Lawrence was in a studio in California, and Jeff was in New York City. But they still text and talk almost every day, and they say their bond hasn't weakened with the distance. But even though they've always been close, Jeffrey still says that when Lawrence came out to him, it was hard.
I'm going to be flat-out honest. I was scared when he told me, and it was like this weird shock to my system. And actually, that night we went to bed and I kind of cried because, like, I was just, like, scared, you know? Like, he had gotten some sort of terminal disease or something. And then I had time to process everything and, like, clearly think it over. And I was just realizing, I was like, dude, this is still the man you know. Like, still the man, like, you grew up with, who raised you, like, absolutely nothing's changed.
When Lawrence found out Jeff accepted him for who he is, he says it was one of the most important moments in his life.
It was a profound relief. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen. I guess it was sort of like getting a brother again.
As for their love lives now?
Relationships are hard.
I think it's hard also to have... It's hard to see our parents and then go out in the world and realize how rare what they have is.
I mean, yeah, you know, they have their fights or whatever, but, like, they just seem to flawlessly, like, deal with each other.
There's a profound level of respect at the core of their relationship. I would say Jeffrey and I share that kind of core. We just haven't found it outside of each other and our family.
And Jeffrey and Lawrence say that although they don't have romantic partners to lean on, they rely on each other in difficult moments. Here's Lawrence.
I've actually had 3 spinal surgeries in less than 10 years, and they've left me with 4 missing cervical discs. And during each of those periods that I had the surgeries, Jeffrey was there for me, period. I think even this distance is bearable because of the relationship I have with Jeffrey. Because I know that if I need him, he'll be here. If he needs me, I'll be there. And the rest is just the rest.
That's Lawrence and Jeffrey Forbes. Lawrence is working at a nonprofit in California, and Jeffrey is a bartender in New York City. After the break, more from Jeffrey Boyer Chapman.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Jeffrey Boyer Chapman says that it's rare for him to read a beautiful exploration of brotherly love, especially one with a gay and straight brother. And he loves that this is a story about Black Americans.
It's just, it's a really gorgeous perspective that is rarely told, and one that just resonated deeply within my heart upon reading it. I was adopted as a baby and was raised with three sisters. I didn't have any brothers. It wasn't until I was 25 years old living in New York that I found members of my biological family, including two brothers, one older brother and one younger brother. My younger brother is a professional football player, and meeting my little brother for the first time, I fell in love with him. There's this deep, beautiful biological DNA connection that I'd never experienced before. I love that dynamic. I love the dynamic of brotherly love. In the Black community in America, homophobia runs wild, and I think at times it takes knowing somebody who you are really close to and love on a level like no other in order to accept otherness in an entire community of marginalized human beings. You can look at another group who you may think you have nothing in common with and other them very easily and cast them aside. But when those qualities are embodied in somebody who you know and love, all of a sudden you're forced to look at your perspective of the world in an entirely different way, and it creates space for love and openness.
Thanks again to Jeffrey for reading this week's piece. You can see him in Unreal on Lifetime and hear him on his podcast, Conversations with Others. Next week, Mel Rodriguez, who stars in the new movie, Overboard.
What does one have to do for a little extra attention? I mean, I had successfully navigated five decades. If I were a 50-year-old bridge or a decommissioned aircraft carrier, there'd be fireworks. I wasn't proud of it, but I wanted more.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, Caitlin O'Keefe, and Amory Sievertson. Additional sound design by Paul Vikas. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.